Well, hello and welcome, everyone. This is The Holistic Way with Dr. A. I'm Dr. Jean-Paul Lamonte. And with me is the one and only Michael, the fabulous IT wizard who really makes this show possible. So thank you for joining me today. Thank you for being here. And oh, we got a good one. I want to talk about the power of consciousness. That is how the mind affects the body. And more importantly, how we can start to use consciousness, not only with the recent evidence that we've discovered in terms of accessing the past, present, and the future, but moreover, how we can apply meditation, mindfulness, and prayer to have a happier, healthier life.
Hi, Dr. Amante. Thanks for having me back. It's great to be here. Before we jump into all this, I'm going to give everybody a little introduction. Dr. Amante is a licensed chiropractor, massage therapist, and hypnotherapist. He has over 20 years of clinical experience. He received his undergraduate degree in psychology and biology from Wake Forest University, and then went on to earn a doctorate from Palmer College of Chiropractic West after completing his training at the Casey Riley School of Massage. For over two decades, he's been an author and educator on holistic natural health. He currently maintains his clinical practice in Virginia Beach, Virginia, where he offers his signature Total Body Tune-Up. It's a unique integration of chiropractic adjustments and massage therapy. You can schedule a treatment with him at hhcare.org, that's hhcare.org, or you can find his YouTube channel at Holistic Healthcare, and he's on social media at Holistic Natural Care. So, Dr. A, let's get into this talk about the power of consciousness and how much does our mind really affect our body.
Let's do it. So when I was an undergraduate, I switched over from biology, biochemistry into psychology. And the reason why I did this, because my own personal experience in knee and back pain and all these issues that I was having, I went to the typical approach, you know, got the x-rays, you know, treatments and so forth, and it really didn't help me a whole lot. And what essentially happened was my family kind of reintroduced me back into the holistic approach of Edgar Cayce. And so as soon as I started to read about the remedies that Cayce gave, this general approach of what the heck is holistic, which ultimately is the whole person, body, mind, and spirit, the same phrases kept coming up time and time again, that the mind is the builder, that consciousness is the key. And so when I switched over to psychology, it was because I was extremely fascinated in this mind-body connection and how our thoughts actually affected our health. And so when I began to apply the recommendations and using meditation, using mindfulness, using prayer, and started to get better and better and better, I realized that not only is this kind of the secret key to all healing, but more importantly, it's this universal access into this one-minded consciousness that we have. And so with the recent evidence that's come out, I really wanted to dedicate this episode to talk about the power of consciousness. And what a lot of people realize is that there's different layers of consciousness, right? Most people are familiar with the ego, you know, the subconscious and the unconscious, you know, what Freud and then later Jung described as, you know, the ego, the id, and there's this all collective unconsciousness that we're sharing into, we're tapped into. And so as I began to explore this, I did research in cognitive psychology in memory. And, you know, one of the most fascinating things, of course, about memory and in the current context is why do people lose it? You know, you think about the great concern of Alzheimer's and dementia, and when people start to forget literally who they are, not only where they left their car keys, but who their loved ones are. And I had a personal experience with my late great grandmother, who gradually suffered from dementia and was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And the last interaction that we had, she didn't even know who I was. And so, of course, the research I did came years before that experience with my own family. And it's fascinating the degree to which, you know, people are so focused on, you know, the physical material things in their lifetime. And especially this society just emphasizes, you know, accumulation of things, you know, how much money is in the bank, how nice the car looks, you know, where you know, where you live and all this stuff. But the truth is you don't get to take any of this stuff with you, right? So when you complete this lifetime and you transition to the next one, the truth is the only thing you get to take with you is memory and consciousness and this idea of our interactions creating a karmic record that essentially you get to take with you to the next lifetime, which certainly there's some debate about this. But when it comes to the Casey readings, he emphasizes over and over again that, you know, we all have past lives, you know, and that, you know, there is no end to it, that consciousness is connected to this eternal kind of infinite mind, and that as we go through each lifetime, each, you know, adventure, so to speak, that we're kind of collecting experiences, that we offer ourselves this opportunity to apply from this spiritual dimension, what might say our soul, and bring it into this physical reality. And so these things, these materials and all the things we acquire are, they could be seen as distractions, but really it's just a vehicle for us to have this opportunity to grow as spiritual beings. And the phrase will come up time and time again that the mind is the builder, and that if we can attain a certain level of consciousness, there need not ever be the worry about us aging or dying. And that, moreover, you know, we can really manifest and attract really anything at all that we desire. And so when it comes to the mind, you know, the research that's now come out, the examples and different individuals that we see and what people are able to achieve when they really get their mind fully involved is absolutely inspiring and astounding. And so let's get right to it. That the research, and most people are familiar with the word quantum physics, right? But what does that really mean? Well, of course, you know, the quantum level is talking about the behavior of particles at the level of atoms, or an even smaller, protons, electrons, and even those components that make up those tiny little particles. And at the quantum level, we realize that this matter, these material things, is 99.99% empty space. And even the 0.00001% isn't actually even matter, right? It's just this kind of condensation of a cloud of electrical potential. So even that isn't even a real thing. So it really beckons this question. So what is material reality actually made of? And the answer is simply, it's, you know, at a certain point, it's all energy. And so that at the quantum level, you know, you have different laws of physics that start to apply. As we've seen, you know, things constantly coming in and out of existence, that, you know, the same object can be in two places at the same time. You know, you can have this this idea that, you know, if you have two particles and you separate them, you know, and they charge together, you separate them as far as you want. What you do to one immediately affects the other. And even more fascinating is this concept of telepathy or teleportation that they're now actually demonstrating and doing research, you know, with quantum computers. And so this is really what we're now discovering is the laws of consciousness, that we're both a quantum and a classical physics human being, basically. And so your consciousness, you know, is accessing and is part of this quantum realm, whereas, you know, the physical body, you know, muscles, bones, joints, all these things behave with the kind of classical physics that we're used to. You know, think of Sir Isaac Newton and the laws of gravity and those things. And so the answer is well, you're really operating in both. And so when it comes to consciousness, it's really outside of the material things. And, you know, when we think about, you know, the process of life, death, and dying, the one thing that will always remain constant is your consciousness. And so the significance of the vibrational state, the energetic state, the frequencies really come into play here, right? Because as you change your brainwave patterns, your experience therefore changes. You know, if you're you know, very agitated. You know, if you're suffering from anxiety, depression, worry, fear, there's you can actually measure the frequency of that state of consciousness and the information that it gives into your cells through your nervous system, through the secretion of hormones. Your body's going to react accordingly to that, you know, versus if you're in a different consciousness state. You know, if you're feeling connected to everything, you know, trust, love, appreciation, gratitude, of course, a very strong vibration here. Different information is going to be, you know, sent electrically through the nerves. Different hormones get secreted, which is going to affect your body in obviously a different way. And so as we shift our perception, obviously our experience changes. And so, you know, research has now shown that individuals, as they practice meditation, they're able to better control their brain waves, and they're able to produce a more coherent heart and brain wave state just by practicing this on a regular basis, but just simply being mindful. So what is mindfulness? It's just simply switching to your sensory awareness of the room around you. So getting out of that flow or that steady stream of the mental thoughts and the mental chatter, and finding that stillness and space in between the thoughts, and just being aware of your surroundings, if nothing else. And a great way to do this is to go outside in nature, and just to feel the sun, to observe and listen to the sounds of the life force and nature around you, you know, feel the earth underneath you, the smells. I mean, think about all the sensory awareness that we have. And what essentially does is it brings you into the present moment. And so to practice mindfulness is to practice present moment awareness. And if nothing else from this podcast today, it's just practicing that, is being now in the present moments, aware of what's happening now and around you, and practice moving out of that thought chatter. Because as we get distracted and kind of hung up with our minds, you know, depending on whatever whimsical thoughts are coming in, it can obviously change your day, right? And so when we really look at how this actually affects the body, how does consciousness and your thoughts do this? It's simply through the firing of electrical potentials in the brain and how it stimulates the secretion of various hormones and those chemicals as they enter into the bloodstream, activating all the cells, all the tissues, and all the organs of the body. So if we're constantly thinking about a certain set of thoughts or constantly having the same type of emotional experiences, then it solidifies in the body in this way. And so practicing on a daily basis, first of all, meditation, which is just practicing getting out of the thought chatter, just creating that empty space, practicing mindfulness, which that present moment awareness, being, you know, just simply aware of all the sensory perceptions around you. And then, of course, the next one is then prayer, you know. And so when we think of prayer, this isn't really anything specific focused to one religion. But it's just the other side of the coin of meditation, meaning that prayer is this concerted effort of sending information from our brain out into the universe. You know, whether, you know, you practice a certain type of prayer or, you know, a certain religion or a denomination of it, you know, everyone has their own forms, but it's like giving the phone call out versus meditation. As you learn to empty the mind and find the space between your thoughts, it's receiving that phone call from within. And so there's this two-way or multi-way stream of information that is all based on the current vibrational state that you're holding.
I think we've talked about this in a past episode as it relates to maybe the endocrine system, but it's not just a one-way street, right? It's not just our consciousness affecting our body. The things we do with our body can then affect our conscious state, right? I mean, I think we've all experienced, we're not in a great mood, we're not in a good headspace, but we make ourselves go do that run or do that exercise, right? And that clears our thoughts. If I hold my body in a certain way, I start to feel differently. Smiling, right?
Yeah.
even smiling can change your mood,
yeah.
right? Even if you're not feeling happy, but you just kind of, you know, I'm going to smile. You know, these physical triggers can actually start affecting our consciousness too.
Right. And they found in research that people who were being interviewed, if they, you know, went kind of alone for a moment and, you know, kind of opened up and assumed a power pose, which, you know, you're standing upright and, you know, you reach your arms out and really broaden the expression of the physical body, not only did they perform better in the interview, but the person who interviewed them perceived them as being more confident. So absolutely right. You know, if you change your physical state, it directly affects your mood, your consciousness, and the like. And so, you know, of course, you know, when I think about people that have inspired me, a lot of it has to do with hacking into the mind through physical movement. So I just finished the book by David Goggins, you know, Can't Hurt Me. And he's an individual who, you know, changed his life very radically over, you know, a few years, and, you know, and really sets a good example of how to hack into the mind through the physical body. And like you said, just moving and activating it, you know, will affect the mind as the mind vice versa affects the body. Mm-hmm. So how can we do that? You know, especially if we don't feel like getting up or doing something, or we're not in a good mood, or our headspace, you know, isn't where we want it to be. And the simple way to do it is just start with one foot in front of the other. Just start with simple activities and simple things just to get your body moving. And just by doing that, gradually it will begin to change. And so sometimes, you know, I'll even kind of have to sit there and, you know, collect myself, like before I started today, you know, kind of focusing on what it is that I'm here to achieve, coming back to, okay, my purpose, you know, what motivates me. And, you know, honestly, it really helps by, number one, focusing on other people, you know, especially when, you know, going into work and doing treatments, you know, if our consciousness is only directed to ourselves, it's only going to get us so far. And there's a real limit to that. But as soon as we start, you know, thinking of others and how we can make the world a better place, and like you said, just smiling at people, you know, immediately what's the natural response of other people to do is just smile back. And sometimes just a smile, you know, just a positive phrase, and you can see someone's mood change. And that's one of the simplest ways that, you know, we can help others is just through our own body language. You know, and just kind of reminding people, oh yeah, you know, relax, you know, be confident. It's all going to work out. It's all going to be okay. And, you know, what's really interesting to me about this is the fact that, you know, just through meditation, you know, they did a research study back in the 90s in DC where they had, you know, many people doing transcendental meditation throughout the city of DC, and they brought the crime rate down by 25% in the middle of the summertime. And by doing nothing else but just meditating. And so there's so much evidence now that we're all tapped into this collective unconsciousness, this one mind. And I think a big part of why I'm here is to apply, practice, and teach this law of oneness. And so coming back to the Casey readings, one of the main things that inspired me was this reading, you know, given to, you know, an individual who's trying to create a spiritual based school and a spiritually based education. And he says, just teach oneness for the first 6 months, just focus on oneness and the interconnection. And so I think a lot of time, you know, as individuals, we get kind of caught up in the ego and thinking that you're alone or you're isolated, you know, which, you know, is part of the experience, right? The journey, the reason why we came here is to have this individual subjective experience, you know, and as you kind of enter into the body, kind of these physical, like I said, classic physics, the blinders are kind of put on in a way. When you start to really remove those and take a big step back, you know, you can literally tap into this consciousness field. And so I know, you know, many people have, you know, told me about experiences where they've, you know, immediately knew that something was going on with a loved one or a friend of theirs, or the experience when you think about, you know, a friend that you haven't talked to in a while, and then they send you a text or they call you, they reach out. And there's many examples of, you know, these experiences where you felt like, you know, you've been at a place before, or, you know, kind of that deja vu experience, or even when you look at someone, you're like, no, I've met you before. And all those recognitions and awareness that, man, there's something bigger that's at play here is absolutely true. And I think one of the most powerful things in using consciousness is realizing that, you know, not only are we ultimately all one collective consciousness experiencing itself subjectively, but that all time is one. And so, you know, when we talk about, you know, the flow state, for example, when you're so immersed in doing something that you lose track of time, you know, and many people kind of are very quick to quip, oh, time is just an illusion. Well, yes and no, right? Like you can look at a clock and, you know, and very quickly recognize that, no, there is such thing as time, you know, but it just gives us coordinates, energetic coordinates, right? So we meet at a specific place at a specific time. And so we line up and, you know, we have dinner together, or, you know, we meet for shooting a podcast or video or whatever it might be. But that's only just on one level. You know, time exists in one dimension or a few dimensions, but it doesn't exist in all of them. And I think when it comes down to what the future holds for us as human beings, it's going to be, number one, recognize that we are multidimensional beings, and that at a certain level that we're all connected into this collective unconsciousness and this one mind. It's like when, you know, these big worldwide events happen, you know, whether it's, you know, negative things, you know, and, you know, wars and so forth, we're all kind of affected. We all can kind of feel that, right? Versus, you know, the other side too, when, you know, when something really positive happens, you know, we all kind of feel that same energy. We all kind of feel that uplifting effect. But I'm going to propose something now that is probably going to be pretty new to anyone listening, which is this idea of memory and how you can actually access through consciousness, and you can edit, rewrite, and, you know, decondition memories. And so one of the most common things that I find in clinical practice is that people who undergo traumas, physical, mental, emotional traumas, how that effect lingers in their muscle memory. And even though you can treat the body, you know, every day I go in and I tune these people up, get them aligned, release the tension out of the muscles, and yet the same patterns keep coming back. And so, you know, honestly, Michael, I've been really scratching my head about, okay, how can we kind of get to the heart and unlock those patterns and those cycles and really create some long-lasting positive change? And the key is absolutely consciousness. And so, you know, it's really difficult to tell people exactly how to do it in their own lives. So I'm going to talk about how I did it. And I'm going to talk about now how I came to this realization. And this might be ahead of our time, but it's something I'm very interested in developing and teaching. So please let me know if you have any ideas or any input on this. So I'll share two experiences. One was a high-speed car accident that I had back in 2014, in which, you know, I finished up at work. I was going to the bank to make a deposit, and I was getting ready to make a left turn across, you know, Virginia Beach Boulevard, about a 50-mile-an-hour, you know, four-lane, you know, road on either way. And I remember pulling up to make this left turn. It wasn't a stoplight or anything. It was just at an intersection. I was getting ready to left turn at the bank. And, you know, I could see the oncoming traffic, and there was a space that was kind of open, but, you know, it's one of those where like, I don't want to push it or force it and so forth. So there was a bigger gap behind the cars that were coming than I saw. And so I decided to sit there and just wait just a few more seconds, and, you know, I'll go when the bigger gap occurs. And so I kind of waited. And what I didn't realize is there was this large pickup truck behind me. And nothing against people with pickup trucks or anything. I'm not trying to stereotype here. But the guy was driving a pickup truck and decided that he wasn't going to wait. I obviously got very impatient. And so when that big gap opened up that I saw, I hear this engine rev behind me. This pickup truck goes out around and then cuts off in front of me. And so I remember taking my foot off the brake like I was going to start to make this left turn. I hear this truck go, vroom, you know, and come around and literally cut me off and just slammed on the gas, zipped across, and there he went. And so I was kind of stunned, you know, at first I was like, whoa, you know, it's like, all right there, buddy, you know, that the kind of initial reaction. So my eyes were on this pickup truck, and the challenge was, is it was so large, it blocked my view, that apparently another car had taken a right turn into the far right-hand lane. I didn't see it. And they were accelerating up to full speed, which, again, it's like 45, 50 mile an hour speed limit. And so the truck kind of stopped me. He cleared the intersection. But then when I hit the gas to go ahead, the next thing I know, I didn't even see the car that hit me. It all happened so fast. And anyone who's been in an auto accident, you know, I'm sure has had a similar experience where just milliseconds, you know, go by. And all of a sudden I hear this honk. And then, you know, you hear the impact, you feel it. And then wham, this car hits me on the right side. And, you know, that wasn't the worst part. The worst part was the car then gets pushed up onto the sidewalk, runs over a guy waiting at the bus stop, snaps his leg, barely misses a fire hydrant, and goes back into the road and screeches to a halt. And it hit me so hard that literally all the airbags deployed, the right side of my car was kind of caved in. Luckily, I didn't have any passengers. It totally took off the front bumper. Smashed the wheel so I couldn't even turn. You know, all the lights go on the dashboard, you know, like, you know, you get that smell of like the burning plastic and the smoke starts emanating from the front of the car. And my seat got kind of wedged up. And I remember, you know, I hit my knee really hard on the dashboard and obviously, you know, kind of whipped the neck a bit. And, you know, I kind of had to really push and kick the door open. And so the first thing I thought of is, man, I can't believe that guy just did that. And so I could see his truck starting to drive off. And I'm like, heck no. So literally without even thinking, I kind of kicked the door open. I couldn't even drive the car, just crawl to a stop. And I literally got out and ran the truck down. So it's benefit to be a runner. But ran the truck down and literally got in front of the guy. And something just kind of took over. And I told him there was an accident, you know, that I would need his information. And just, and he kind of looked up. He could see the carnage behind. And without even thinking, he just kind of handed me his license. And I took the guy's information, his license plate, which I gave to the, you know, the police and so forth. And the guy left. Whatever happened to him and the result, I don't know. But immediately ran over and checked on the guy that had gotten run over. And he was in bad shape. But man, talk about angels, you know, I mean, and I do believe in angels, Michael, with that name. And so I do believe in them, and for many reasons, and this is one of them, because immediately behind the car that hit me was a nurse who just got off duty. And it was a male nurse who literally was still in his scrubs, had his EMT bag, immediately got out, called the ambulance, started tending to the guy. You know, the store that was right there, the workers ran out and they start, you know, calling and tending to everyone. And the, you know, he lived, you know, and everything worked out, you know, with that individual. Luckily, you know, nobody died from this. But the crazy part was that immediately, you know, having to sit there for hours, talk to the police officers, and I got home, you know, immediately I could feel the soreness in my neck, the soreness in my knee, and those things that had hit the inside of the car. And I remember going to sleep at night just praying and focusing on those other people. Because obviously the other driver, it was a young female, and she was obviously quite shaken up after what happened. And obviously the poor guy who got run over and got his leg broke in the process. But I also prayed for the truck driver, you know, and the impatience, you know, that, you know, all of us experience at one time or another when you're driving in traffic and you're having to wait for other people, and kind of praying for everyone and myself included. And, you know, and I started to do some self-therapy that evening, did some electrostim, obviously used some ice, self-massage, stretching, and so forth. And the miraculous thing was I woke up the next morning absolutely pain-free. And I don't know exactly why that is. I definitely, you know, would say that, well, you know, I take best care of my body that I can with exercise and so forth. You know, maybe it was prayer, maybe it was meditation. Was it focusing on other people? You know, perhaps. Maybe it was all the above. But I remember, you know, obviously my car was totaled, and I went to give a seminar lecture that afternoon. And so I had to get a ride. And as soon as I got in the car, oh my goodness, the stress and the anxiety, I mean, that sympathetic nervous system, that fight or flight immediately kicked in. And the truth was this, that happened like in the middle of the week. And that weekend, I was scheduled and registered to do a triathlon in downtown Washington, D.C., the D.C. triathlon that weekend. And so I did the race, even though I, you know, maybe felt okay physically, but was still kind of, you know, I was definitely stressed out, having some mental anxiety issues going on. And I remember finding a car dealership with the same make and model of the car that I drove, because I had a bike rack and everything that was already fit. And it was a Prius, for those wondering. So for this make and model of a Prius. And so it was in Salisbury, Maryland, which just so happened to be on the drive up to DC. So I called the dealership. The car was available. It was the right price. Again, talk about, you know, spirit and the universe and the angels working and, you know, lining up sometimes. And sure enough, drove up, checked out the car, bought it right then and there, you know, racked, you know, the bike, went and did the DC triathlon. But the day before, driving through downtown DC, oh my goodness, the 495 Beltway is probably one of the most stressful areas I think any human could drive. There's no such thing as rush hour anymore, because it's like rush hours, like rush day, you know. Unless you're driving like 2 o'clock in the morning, you're going to hit DC Beltway traffic. And I remember, you know, cars zipping by and honking their horns. And so that memory of the accident, right before the impact, I remember hearing the honk of the car and then wham. And so anytime I heard a car horn, it would trigger that. And, you know, and I remember literally having to pull over, having a panic attack. And I only had a couple experiences with panic attacks earlier in life, when I was younger and had, you know, stress and unresolved issues. But man, that happened for a while after that. And so I started, you know, really thinking about, okay, what can I do? Do I need therapy? Do I need to go on, you know, what do I need to do here to work with this? And so being a psychology major and, you know, going back into my research in cognitive psychology and memory, and I thought, well, why can't I go back into the memory and change it? And maybe if I focus on that, then I'll have, you know, less and less of this trigger and less of this anxiety. Because every time I got in a car, anytime I went through traffic, man, I turned into like the old lady driver, you know, where, I mean, if the speed limit was 45, I'm going 44 miles an hour, you know. And I was, for years, I was so careful and so mindful and literally just scared of getting another accident like that and causing anybody else pain. And so what I literally did was, I force myself every day, sometimes two or three times a day, to drive the exact same route as the accident. You know, and for the longest time, you could still see the tire tread marks, you know, in the grass and in the sidewalk, you know, where the accident happened. And every time I would take that left turn, the same kind of tension, I could feel my breath change. I could feel my body tense up, and I could feel that, you know, that anxiety start to come up. But as I did it over and over again, I found just the action of physically doing that, it helped a little bit. You know, each time it got a little bit less, a little bit less, a little bit less. And then I wondered, what if I could literally go in and rewrite the memory? The same way that we go into computer software programs and we're constantly editing to improve the function of the software. And I was like, and I knew that the brain worked very similarly to computer programs. And so I started not only driving it, but I would then visualize it. And not only just visualize in my mind, but actually feel the feelings of everything being okay. Everything's going to work out. Everyone's going to be fine, no matter what the outcome was. And then I started feeling and visualizing myself driving through that with everything just being just fine. you know, and just at first it was kind of like, oh, just a little brush, you know, the car just brushed up in each other. And like, you know, if you think about like bumper cars, right, and how we bump into each other in the amusement park, and that's hilarious and fun. I mean, granted, you know, you can get a whiplash, you know, some neck soreness afterwards, but how our mind is different when we perceive something as fun and entertaining versus an accident that's traumatic. And what's the difference? And the difference is how we choose to perceive that memory of it. You know, we look back on amusement parks and being, oh, that was fun, and roller coasters, and it's loud and it's banging, and we're getting knocked around, and oh, we're having so much fun here, versus car accident. And, you know, oh my God, this is trauma. And now this incident, and I've seen in patients where people have had the same physical pain 20, 30, maybe more years after the trauma. Well, this is back from my accident, my slip and fall. I had a patient talking about a slip and fall they had in a hotel from the newly buffed floors over 20 years ago, and they were still having the same physical pain. And the truth is that in a 7-year process, Michael, every cell in the body has been replaced. So technically, you have a new body, physically speaking, every 7 years, but what remains the same is the consciousness residing inside the body, inside the temple. And so what if we could go back in and change that consciousness? So that's what I started doing, and my goodness, it worked. As I visualized the process of everything working out, and I visualized all the potentials that could have happened that day based on the choices that were made, I started to visualize, what if these choices were made? What if the person was relaxed and patient behind me? And what if that never happened? And I started playing that possibility over and over again. And I know that people are familiar with the different possibilities or in the quantum world based on, thank you, Disney and the Marvel Universe, giving everyone this quantum mania and all these, you know, the multiverse is now, you know, kind of eking its way into the collective mind with all these possibilities. And if you think about it, there's literally an infinite number of potentials. Have you ever gone back and thought about, what if I chose this versus this? Would I still have met this person that I ended up marrying, or had this friendship, or had this career? Or maybe I wouldn't have gone to that space where this thing happened. And so I started to do that every single day. And not only did I start to do that with that accent, I find that it got less and less and less until eventually when I went back one day and I made that left-hand turn, nothing, no memory, no tension, nothing. And that's when I knew that something deeply in me had changed by literally going back and rewriting that memory. And it's not that I'm saying that, you know, I'm pretending or denying that this didn't happen. I'm just saying that as far as memory is concerned, what we now know through holistic research is that if you visualize and feel something in your mind's eye, in your brain, your body, physical body, will have a similar, almost the same experience as if you actually experienced the thing. And, you know, and again, another inspiring individual, is, you know, the work and the consciousness of the HeartMath Institute with those individuals. But think of like Dr. Joe Dispenza, who is a very popular author and speaker on this exact concept, that as we visualize health and wellness, and certainly how he went through a very traumatic accident, you know, with multiple spinal fractures and healed himself. And he talks about the power of consciousness and just visualizing that healing process and how it helped him. Obviously, it took a while and the consistent practice every day, but I'm telling you folks, this stuff works. And you can literally go in and rewrite your memories and change how you feel and how you respond to things. And it gets even crazier because I've discovered now that you can not only rewrite the past, but you can also access future potentials. And by accessing the future, you can actually change the past through the future. And you can actually change the future through the past, and you can actually change the past through the present. And by changing the past to the present, you can also change your future. Isn't that wild? The past, present, and future.
You might have to say that one again.
Are all happening right now, folks. And I'll say it as many times as it needs to, because again, this is going to be the future of humanity. And I know it, like I know I have 2 feet right now. That you can change your future by changing the past. You can also change your past through the present. And you can also change your present to change your past, therefore changing your future. And I can give you many examples of this, but let me just give you probably one of the most profound ones for me. So I was born and grew up in Lake Charles, Louisiana, and one of probably the most pivotal years of my life was when I was 4 years old. And my mother and I basically moved out and had to leave because, well, put it out there, my father, you know, would have often fits of rage, and, you know, and there were a lot of memories and very challenging, abusive memories. And we'll just leave it at that. You know, he was a Louisiana state trooper, you know, had been the police force for many years. And so, as one could imagine, things were very complicated. It's not you could just up and leave, you know, and, you know, you'd call up one of his buddies, pick us up, bring us right back, et cetera. And then my mom got pregnant with my younger brother, her second child in this marriage. And when we got to Virginia Beach, there was a complication and a heart defect, and my baby brother died when he was 4 days old. So it was very traumatic. And I remember, my mother going into depression for a very long time. And, you know, kind of having those experiences at an early age is challenging on multiple levels. And I remember kind of growing up having, you know, kind of anger issues myself. And how this affected not only my relationship with my family, but also friends, relationships that I had. And obviously, you know, growing up, you know, for the longest time, you know, as one might imagine, you know, a lot of animosity, resentment towards my own father. And, you know, I went through years of counseling and so forth to kind of deal with, the, you know, these memories of trauma, abuse, and so forth. And so I got to this point where, as I was studying psychology and, you know, applying the concepts I shared earlier about the auto accident that I was in, I began to apply these concepts to that connection, that relationship, because a lot of those patterns would keep coming up, and especially, you know, when my son was born. And as I think about all parents would agree, that when you have kids, this, you know, the memories of your childhood come up, and it directly affects how you want to or not raise your kids. And so when I really started to think about how to apply concepts of forgiveness and healing, and especially in relationships, my father was kind of the center of this project to myself. And so when I started to think about what kind of, you know, dad that I wanted to be, and kind of, you know, feeling and kind of seeing some of these patterns come up, I knew I had to go in and kind of change the past memory. And so the memories that were still there and, you know, very palpable and very poignant, actually, I started applying the same concept where, you know, I would go into these memories and I would visualize them going a different way. And again, this isn't a way of being like denying that, oh, this didn't happen, or trying to whitewash anything. No, it's in fact, if anything, it's embracing what happened, but then telling your mind, okay, this is also the potential of what also could have happened. And with this consciousness in this person and this person and this person, this is also how it could have played out as well. And obviously, you could make it even worse, but why do that? You know, if you're trying to heal, you're trying to shift the frequencies and the vibration of that consciousness to one that you desire. And so the first and foremost question is, what is your ideal? You know, and this is what I directly learned from the Casey readings, is you have to know, what is your ideal? What is the purpose? What is the lesson here? And just hold to that. And so when I completely, you know, immerse myself into what kind of father I wanted to be, and that ideal experience of having a positive, loving, well-trusting, bonded relationship, not only with my son, but also with my father and with everyone in my family and all of my relationships for that matter. It's like, okay, well, what are the memories that's kind of interfering with that and kind of holding me back and kind of this negative resentment, you know, where we almost kind of wear it like a crown, you know, indeed, and how people say, well, I went through this challenge and I had this happen to me, so this is why I'm this way. And I'm here to tell you folks that's it's bullshit, you know, and not bullshit in terms of what you experienced and what you went through, but holding on to that, you're just repeating the same cycle over and over again, or at least that's what I found. So I literally would go into those memories when I would literally lock the door and, you know, and hide and cringe and in these things and so forth, and those memories of just the absolute rage that would come out of this individual, and I just changed it. And I just started visualizing, like, what if we got into like a tickle fight? Or, you know, instead of a belt, it was a bouquet of flowers. Or, you know, and so I sort of visualize these things over and over and over again. And it's the consistency and the repetition that's the key. And as I started to do this, I began to find little bit by little bit. And, you know, sometimes it's like you take a couple steps forward and maybe a step back. But as the memories would come up, the emotional response that I could literally tangibly feel began to change. Right, and to begin to get less and less and less. And I remember finally one day in my 30s, you know, I actually went to visit my father and I confronted him about it and told him about my memories. And it was almost like he had kind of blacked it all out in his mind. He was like, I didn't do that. I'm like, yeah, you did. And I could give him accurate, I mean, very specific details, you know, and even like being 2 years old, you know, and obviously studying and practicing hypnosis and activating and awakening memories, I realized I was activating memories of my own self. And I would be able to remember, I mean, just very specific details of things, 2-3 years old. And so by doing that, and you kind of realize that, it gave us the perfect opportunity to forgive and release. And of course, you know, there was obviously big emotion, you know, that outpoured out it. And I think anything that activates that emotional release is telling you that you're onto something, that you're really into the jelly of the donut of whatever it is that's affecting you. And not to use donuts as an analogy here, but, you know, the heart of it, so to speak. And so we had that forgiveness, you know, we talked about it. There was a nice release. Obviously, as I drove away that evening, you know, felt more of a weight off my shoulders. Obviously, did everything get hunky-dory, peachy keen? No, but it felt better, and it was a step in the right direction. And so then I began to visualize, like, okay, what kind of father do I want to be? And I knew that I wanted to have a positive interaction between my son and my dad. And so we started to set up regular video calls, you know, and absolutely, in fact, I got to let him know we got to reschedule the one tonight. And these regular interactions so that he could have this interaction with his grandson and how healing that would be for him. And so as I went into the past and changed the memory, or I would say I altered and edited the memories to affect how I felt in the present moment, until, you know, when I would go through those memories, I didn't feel anything but love and appreciation for those moments, because they made me realize how important it is to create a peaceful, loving home and environment. And that's why I want to focus on my son. So going into the past and kind of rewriting the memories, how it changed me in the present. And so people believe that time is linear, kind of past, present, and future, and you can't change the past. And I'm telling you, that's absolutely not true. That the past is changeable, and you can alter it by altering your perception of how things went down. And it doesn't take any, you know, the simplest example I can give you is, you know, you could have, you know, a big get together, you know, or a party or whatever it is. And afterwards, if you ask each person individually what their experience was, there's going to be some overlap, but they're all going to have a different experience at that party. You know, oh my God, I can't believe this happened. And when this person said that, I was so offended and I left. Or, you know, the people were like, what are you talking about? That was hilarious. I love that joke. The same moment, the same event, but completely different perceptions and therefore completely different experiences emotionally and as it affects the body and the physical experience of that. And I, you know, I really understand now the way that you change the past is through memory and shifting your perspective. And so I began to empathize with my father and I realized all the trauma he went through as a kid. And I realized that's like, man, he was just repeating cycles and patterns that's what he knew, right? That's, and when it came to, the triggers that he was experiencing, like he in a sense, he was kind of doing his best to manage his own emotions. And when he would get triggered, that's just simply repeating the patterns that he knew. You can't fault anyone for that. There's no blame. That was just what happened based on his own experiences. And when I began to understand that, like, man, I really felt for him, and I felt that compassion. And then going into his mind and his memories. And the only way that's possible is if we're all one consciousness. And I truly believe that part of the equation of the new era in humanity is going to be expanding your consciousness through empathy. And as you can truly empathize and put yourself fully in someone's experience, feeling the things that they feel or they would feel if these things happened, makes us really aware of how we're coming across to individuals, right? And how could you raise a fist or point a gun at another individual if you were tapped in that one mind, because you would know how that feels to yourself. And I'll go you even one further. When I began to study the near-death experiences and people who undergo these life reviews, that they literally died and then come back to life and share the experience. And there's tens of thousands of these, documented cases now, and they're describing how when you go through your life review, folks, when you pass from this lifetime, you will have to feel and experience everything that you put out there. So what you made other people feel, you will have to feel yourself. And so the only way that's possible is if we're all sharing this collective unconsciousness that we've discovered and that we've researched now. And so by going through and empathizing, that I was able to not only forgive, but kind of feel that compassion, that releasement. And by changing the past perception, man, did it change how I felt in the present. And then I went into the future to realize, okay, what kind of father do I want to be? But more importantly, what kind of relationship do I want to have with my own father? And I began to set that ideal. And I began to see that positive, loving, kind interaction. And the more I focused on that, it was like I kind of got these cues. It's like, okay, well, to get to that future potential, this is what I need to do in the present. And this is what I'm so kind of hung up from the past. And so by visualizing where I wanted to be in the future and accessing that conscious potential, because again, the future is kind of like air, the element of air and steam. It's multiple places. It's not really solidified, but with all the different potentials, you can focus on one. And this is how people talk about manifesting, is fully immerse yourself in where you want to be, feel that emotion and ground it into the present moment. And then you can reflect back on, okay, in the present, what patterns from my past is holding me back, or why would I doubt that this is possible because this thing has happened to me in the past, right? And so by going into the future, looking back, I knew what I had to do in the present and what I needed to change in the present, and the cycles and patterns still from the past that need to be altered and changed. So you see, by changing the past, we change the future. And by going into the future, we realize we have to change in the present, and therefore also what needs to be changed in the past. And all these things are so intrinsically connected, they are all one. Past, present, and future, I understand now, are all happening simultaneously in the now. And I'll go you one further. Not only in this lifetime, but all of your lifetimes are happening simultaneously. And that by awakening to this collective unconsciousness, but the collective unconsciousness of all of your potential lives, past, present, and future lives, by acting now, you can actually heal the elements from your past lives. And this is expressed in the Casey readings, in the karmic patterns we're experiencing now. People are like, why the heck is this thing happening? And he would say, because it's in a past life. But what if also this is a future life? What if the challenges we're experiencing right now are preparing us for not only what's going to happen in the future in this lifetime experience, but what's going to happen in a future life? I mean, try to wrap your head around that. And I think that you know, the way that we can now project our consciousness, when we talk about remote viewing, we could talk about empathizing, literally putting yourself in someone else's perspective and feeling what they're feeling, shows that consciousness is non-local, which means it doesn't exist in a physical component of your body. That's why consciousness is a quantum experience, and it is your connection to the quantum, to the infinite potentials. And so one thing I've started to now recommend to patients that I'm now doing in my own life and finding really good positive results with it is visualizing where I want to be, but also the healing that needs to take place and seeing that healing is already done. And I think one of the best forms of prayer is that, is seeing the will of whatever form of prayer, whatever religion or spiritual tradition you have, just project that mind out there into spirit, whatever you phrase gifted it, but seeing is already done. Feeling that feeling as if it's already done and accomplished. And here's the wildest part. As we do that on the regular basis, we will get input and information back in the present moment on the steps and things we need to do to get there. Now, sometimes we don't, which is one thing I'm currently experiencing right now, which is sometimes you're not given a specific direction or maybe an idea, which can be kind of frustrating in the sense that we kind of maybe whenever you feel stuck. But I'm realizing now that those moments are teaching us to just simply be still and present, and it's not time yet. And that sometimes when we're forcing something or we're trying to do all these things like I'm currently trying to do right now in my present life, and you're trying this out, you're trying that out, and you're like, man, what direction should I go? And I'm not getting any clear signals because it's time to step back, be present with yourself, be mindful, take some time to meditate, and you'll know when it's time to go when you're in that state of flow. And so I have this phrase, when you're in the flow, you'll know where to go, you know? And I think that's very true. And that when we're trying to force something and we're kind of doing something out of kind of mindless habit and repetition, and we keep getting kind of maybe negative feedback from the people around us or our life experience, that's just giving you information from maybe your future self or even in the present that maybe now's not the time. Maybe it's time to just be patient and the green light will come when it's time to go. And so visualize the healing that you desire. Visualize the body physically, visualize the mind mentally, visualize maybe the finances, the relationship, you know, just and feel that. And as you do that consistently on a regular basis, you will get information. And there's actually a classical explanation to this, because there's research studies that were done by these brain surgeons. And when they were exploring and mapping the brain and consciousness, just out, they would go to stimulate a part of the brain and they would actually receive sensory triggers, and those brain areas would light up just a fraction of a second before the stimulus was given. They're like, what? I mean, we're talking milliseconds, but before the stimulus was given, there would be this, you know, response or this reaction. And there's another research study done where they had individuals staring at a blank computer screen that at specific intervals within an image would appear. Now, while these people are looking at the computer, they're hooked up to EEGs, it's measuring their pulse, it's measuring their skin response, and all these things to measure that stress response that we talked about, you know, sympathetic response, fight or flight. And what was wild is the images that would show up would either be something neutral, like a table, a chair, maybe a coffee cup, or it would be a very graphic, you know, image of like a murder scene. Or, you know, a gigantic plane crash or something that would be very stressful, obviously, if you witnessed it in person. You know, a predator consuming the prey or something out of nature, something like that. And what was wild is you could actually measure the person getting stressed and tense right before the image was shown, before they even knew. And it was reliable and reproducible again and again and again. And so the question then becomes, how is this possible? And the doctor actually, these doctors actually found that you have neurons in your brain and in your mind that are projecting backwards in time. So that feeling, like when you go into a space, you're like, I don't know if I should be here. And that hair starts to stand up, your body gets tense, your breath changes, your heart rate changes. You're like, man, I probably should get out of here. I don't think something good is going to happen here. You ever have that feeling? And I know a lot of other people also have as well. It's like this intuition that we're all tapped into, but it's like your mind is projecting backwards in time that if you don't do this thing, something bad potentially can happen here. Or you just get that intuitive, man, I should maybe do this or do that. Yes, there is a part of you that has already happened and projecting backwards in time. So yes, there is part of your intuition, your consciousness that is actually existing in the future, talking back to yourself in the present moment. That's the power of consciousness. And as we learn how to awaken and develop and train that, we're going to see a completely different society. And that if every day we went into our future selves, manifested what it is that we want to achieve, what it is that we want to attract, where it is that we're going, what do we want to do, you're going to receive information back to it. So whether it's something you're trying to achieve, in whatever aspect of life, as you visualize yourself doing that and put your consciousness in that future potential, information will come back to you in the present that will guide your decision making, letting you know where to go when you're in that flow state. And specifically, how it relates to health and healing is to visualize the healing as if it's already done, and to visualize doing things that you enjoy doing with this health, whether it's a freedom of pain or whether it's healing a condition, whatever it is. Visualize not only how you feel, but how you're going to help other people. And I think this goes a long way because when you look at studies on meditation, when you look at studies on prayer, there is this very real effect that as you add more consciousness to it, as you add a collective experience, and this is why most all organized modern religions, they all pray collectively. They do these things as a group and collectively, because the more people that are focused on the same potential, the more likely it is going to happen. And that's the power of the mind and consciousness. And so this is why it's important to have this connection with other people. And as you collectively, set this intention, and you can see and visualize this and meditate, pray on it every day, you will be given guidance on do these things, stop doing these things. And what I found in my own experience is like you'll just attract these things. Like all of a sudden someone brings something up. Hey, have you heard of this thing before? Or all of a sudden, on the news feed, scrolling through your phone, this thing will pop up. And like, oh my goodness. And this idea of synchronicity, and kind of these, these almost seemingly random things. I mean, I really don't believe in that randomness anymore. I believe that we are co-creators of our reality and experience. And the more we can focus the mind on the experience we're trying to attract, the more potentials are going to show up to have that experience. And so every single day, we should be practicing visualizing these things, putting it out there in a form of prayer, and then emptying the mind. Emptying the distractions, just like weeding a garden, pulling out all those negative thoughts, all those negative emotions of self-doubt, and those things that are holding you back, which are again all based on the past experience that really have little to no whatsoever, no bearing on the present moment. Just echoes and shadows, so to speak. And as we begin to change those, our current experience changes. Back full circle now. We think about, oh, why I do or do want to do this thing. As you begin to move your body, as you change your physical, shape and structure, stretching it out, exercising and so forth, the mind therefore has to follow along and change, and therefore your experience is going to change. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for joining us on the Holistic Way with Dr. A. You can certainly check out the other podcast episodes, the other videos, and the other holistic research articles on hhcare.org. Again, I'm a chiropractor, massage therapist, hypnotherapist, so If you're in Virginia Beach and you want a total body tune-up, come on down. You can certainly book online and schedule at the website, whcare.org. You can find me on YouTube at Holistic Health Care is the name of the channel, and on Instagram, Facebook, Dr. John Paul Amante at Holistic Natural Care. So thank you very much. May the health be with you.